our
Yeah, well,
society.
we're not arguing
No,
either
no.
with
But
each
what
other
the
because
gist was that that foreign people were brought to this country, and like the German and British,
I was just
to
trying to get to the pedigree because it is referenced, but it's not known as the Torbett document in Paris Flammonde's book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, which was published in print in
Well, that's
1969.
a
That's
different
what I
book.
say. So I'm sure that version of the Torbett document was brought to you in 1970, and then you subsequently got
Well, see what I
a
got.
revised version.
No, I got the entire thing, and the Paris Lemoine book is 10 pages or 12 pages, and I was given the few hundred pages because David Copeland, the attorney in Texas, who was Penn Jones' closest friend, saw the newspaper letter that I sent to congressmen, and in it I referred to these people that were brought for here from other countries for the assassination. And somebody from Texas
Well,
flew
whatever,
out and brought me the document.
yeah, well, whatever, because I have two versions, and
Well, they both came from my house. You copied both of them.
yeah, well,
Well,
but
that's a source.
they're not materially different. Just the second version adds a little bit to the
Yeah.
first, that's all.
I'm just giving where it
And they don't
originated
they're
from.
I'm not trying to say that something conflicts with the other.
No.
But anyway, that's to get the pedigree right, and it was written by David Copeland, attorney in Waco, Texas, and he used the pseudonym William Torbett, so that's why it's called the Torbett document. Its official name is Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal.
Yeah, it's a big title, but it's a
And
heavy book.
but it was the first document that really went heavily into the connections of certain Nazi scientists and generals and other people who were brought over here in the United States after World War II.
And it brought in the Solidarists, the White Russians, the
And
Tsarists who
so,
fled
right
the
next
revolution.
it brought in those people,
And
and
it brought Division 5 of the FBI, which was counterintelligence under William Sullivan.
right, and then it brought in British intelligence with Major Bloomfield and the Canadian connection,
And
which were
Edgar
really,
Bronfman, yeah.
and that leads to Edgar Bronfman of the Rich family.
Yeah, the Seagram, yeah. Yeah. So that the current Pollard story goes right to Rafi Eitan, who was part of Permadex, actually.
Right. And of course, the point that you like to make, which I'll make right now, but that this book, the Torbett document, goes into so many people which other researchers will not touch and will not discuss even to this day.
Well, I call it the litmus paper. There's three tests of a real researcher. One is, will you read the Torbett document? You don't have to agree with it, but will you agree to read it? And if you don't agree with it, discuss the points. Don't throw it out, the baby with the bath. And have you ever examined the material Jim Garrison had in New Orleans against Clay Shaw? And do you listen to Mae Brussel? What do you think of Mae Brussel? If you throw all three out, you have to be a government agent.
Yeah, this brings up another point too, that reading the Torbett document, you realize that it discusses a lot of information that Jim Garrison did find in his New Orleans
Oh, yes.
investigation. Now, very few places have ever discussed that. To my knowledge, no one even has sets of the total trial transcript of the Clay Shaw trial. They're not in general circulation, what I'm saying.
Wow.
I'm not certain that they've even been transcribed.
Well, see, the Torbett document and Clay Shaw and Paris Lemoine's book all overlap. And if people leave that out, the threat of the Torbett document is it not only goes into the Tsarist Russians and British intelligence, but it goes into the Mossad.
But
And there's a
all,
lot of
yeah.
people protecting the Mossad.
Right.
And you can't talk about them, or you say, oh, you're anti-Semitic. Well, they are covering up a lot of murders to protect the Israeli. They don't mind talking about the mafia connection in the Torbett document, but the holy cow is the Mossad. You want?
I was just going to say it's a, and we clearly do need to get into the real documentation, as you say, the Torbett document and the rest. It's a sad commentary on the Garrison investigation. And among many books I have to give you is this Star Spangled Contract, a novel he put out. But to me, the saddest commentary is the most complete article I saw was an interview in Playboy, and back in '66 or '7, it just never, it was so effectively quashed. He himself,
Garrison.
With Garrison, right?
'67,
yeah. Yeah. Well, they're afraid of Jim Garrison. He had latched on. The thing we had in common is I got the Nazi connections early, and he understood them because he knew Clay Shaw and knew he worked with Reinhard Gehlen and knew the international connections in Rome and so forth of Clay Shaw bringing it back to New Orleans and the trademark.
And on that topic, let's say a little bit more about Permindex and CMC, Central Mandelic Commerciale. We really should address the question, perhaps early and often here, of for whom are these various agencies working? As you noted quite well, Tom, they're all very closely interlinked. But let's look perhaps at
some banking books.
Who's really into it? My penny or new, and the rest.
Where are your banking books, huh?
Well, you know, speaking of banking books, this is a kind of a touchy subject because the John Birch Society in the extreme right wing has always said that. Oh, you want to turn that over?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
That the real troublemakers in the world were a group called the Illuminati, and by Illuminati, what they really mean is a bunch of Protestant and Jewish bankers who are supposedly manipulating everything. So, but this is not to say we shouldn't look at banks, because a great deal of the money that's floating around the world now goes in and out of banks.
How about Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile? That's one of your good books. That would tell you who Permindex is working for, wouldn't it, Tom?
But this is kind of off the subject, so we'll let you go with Permindex, May.
Well, I don't think it's off the subject.
Oh,
he said, who are they working for? So I said, go to the banks. Why is that off the subject?
Well, I didn't mean to get off the subject.
Okay.
Okay. I don't think you could get off the subject.
Because you can talk about banks all day, but we want to talk about banks in terms of funny money.
Well, Martin,
and not in the sense of the Birch Society's view of the banking industry throughout the world.
I don't think there's many Birchers listening today.
Well, that's probably true.
If there are, maybe they can call in later.
Nugenhand there in Credit Suisse.
Well,
specifically.
I know one Bircher who listens.
Yeah, right. I do too.
Yeah,
well, the point is, though, that you talk to the left and you talk to a lot of liberals and you start talking about banks, and then their eyes glaze over.
Well, I don't talk to either one. I just talk, and whoever wants to hear it can learn. You know, you can't pick your audience. Let their eyes pop out. Who cares, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, we're trying to break through that.
You don't.
Because if they won't listen to you, you know, if you mention banks and they close their ears, where are we?
Well, let's talk about that. I don't think your breakthrough. I don't try to break through a new person. I try to attract one who already understands something about what you're saying and you support them more in what they believe. They don't think anyone else out there is saying it or doing it. I don't think I influence any single person to change their mind. I just, on the radio, try to attract people who have a feeling something is wrong. They say, oh, this is what I think. You know, give me some more books or information on that. Because I don't think you switch over ideas.
You know, I think it's real interesting that it appears to me that the people that are most responsive to the kind of research that you do generally appears to be people we would say are more of a conservative bent, and the your classic trendy liberals don't want to touch this stuff because they're really scared of it. They think it's flaky and it's
it requires something of them that they want an instant fix. They want an easy answer.
They want right. They want a black and white situation, and they don't want to hear that that there may be those that pretend to be leftists, pretend to be progressive, and are really just the opposite. And I've found when I've tried to warn people about Jesse Jackson, you get the most outraged responses because people don't understand someone can talk about peace and freedom and all this stuff and really be a snake.
This is precisely the point I'm trying to get at. See, Mort Saul in his book Heartland calls a lot of these people the limousine liberals, you know, and there are these people, you bring up the bank, the word bank, and boom, the eyes glaze over, and the ears close up.
I call them the Birkenstock liberals.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You don't need a limousine. You just need two legs.
Well, that's...
No, but the truth is that in every liberal group, quote, liberal, who has the capacity to make social change, there's a Philip Agee type that is infiltrated to direct the group's thinking, because you don't have to infiltrate the Birch Society. You don't infiltrate the right. You already agree. And the thrust of the women's movement, the black movement, the gay, the prisoners movement, the farm workers, the thrust of it is controlled by people who set the boundaries of how far you can grow or grow either way. And it's carefully infiltrated.
That's true. And that makes it doubly hard to really get the information out. But if where are you going to appeal to? What kind of person are you going to appeal to who's going to be receptive to this kind of information?
Well, I never picked my audience. I never tried to appeal to a group.
Well, we can't pick our audience necessarily. I mean, we have to talk to whoever listened to us. I agree with you on that.
I think I have more closet military listening to me than any kind of leftist group, any of the press. There's no black listeners that subscribe to my tapes, and there's a lot of retired military that
do. In that respect, those people you're probably not going to change, because they always will try to turn it around to make it all Russia's fault, because those kind of people basically don't like Russians, they don't like communists, they don't like leftists, they don't like black people, they don't like third world people, and they don't like Jewish people.
Well, I don't know how you can make a category.
And they're going to turn it around, and the Spotlight newspaper is a good example of that. They're going to take anything and turn it around to fit their preconceived notions.
Well, I'm not trying to appeal to Willie Cardo or Mark Lane.
Yeah, well, but my idea is, so who do we talk to? I mean, who's going to listen to us? Is it going to be the extreme right? No. Is it going to be the middle of the road and the left?
I don't think. You see,
and the left? I think it is. I think we're going to get further with those kind of people, providing we don't hit these buzzwords that send them off and make their eyes glaze over and their ears close.
Well, I think that you have to use the words and test them, because if they freak out, they're going to freak out anyway. If you're going to watch every word you use, they're going to buzz off. You know, that you can't say, who are we going to go? You at least suspect, like, say, someone like Daniel Ellsberg is a kingpin of the RAND Corporation, the Defense Department. He's down there with the higher-ups. And I was just reading Decent Interval and the role of Ellsberg right in the heart of the military. And then one day he decides to take these papers and tell you what's going on. Well, do you think, say, being on the air questioning the Kennedy assassination attract somebody like Ellsberg at the time? He's saying that's all BS or doesn't affect me, or why we escalated Vietnam. We can't guess who we're appealing to, because you don't know where your strength is going to come from.
Well, but Ellsberg's not a good example, because there's lots of evidence and there are a lot of people that believe that Ellsberg is some kind of a double agent.
Well, they can call him double, triple, quadruple. He took out the papers and he told you about the escalation of Vietnam and how it happened 2 days after Kennedy was dead. And he certainly was enough trouble to Richard Nixon to just leave the White House because of bugging his office, going into a psychiatrist's office. I mean, he was a thorn in the side of the White House, so he couldn't be a double, triple, quadruple agent, or they wouldn't have been so hysterical.
Well, Prouty makes, L. Fletcher Prouty wrote The Secret Team, and we can get into that later, but I have a letter where he made a reference to Ellsberg as being Ellsberg certainly working for some sort of special interest. Now, this is not illegal. You know, Ellsberg's perfectly free to work for anybody he wants to.
Yeah, but Prouty, he wrote The Secret Team, but he works for the president of Amtrak, who's now on that secret government society to make policy for the next 20 years. He's a member with Kissinger and Brzezinski and Fred Ickley and Fritz Kramer. So his boss, he works for the guy who's making foreign policy, no matter who's elected or not. So, and he were, you know.
Well, but that doesn't mean he agrees with him.
No,
I mean, he's just making a salary.
But outside of Secret Team, what has he done?
Well, he's written all sorts of articles for Gallery. Yes, May. They're good. And he's written a 15-part series for Freedom Magazine.
Yes. But again, taking it inside the security, the CIA does a lot. He does write good articles. I'll take that back. But on the other
hand, we don't know. See, the point is that you really don't know. Different people have different things to say about other people, and it may be disinformation, which is just an attempt to smear or make someone else seem unbelievable or not to be trusted.
But it's not. I don't think it matters what people say. I think it's what they do. He does keep producing articles for Freedom.
My point was just getting back to who. We're doing this work. You're doing a tremendous amount of work. Have done a tremendous amount for 17 years, and I believe that
23.
After the radio, after your radio series. But I believe that we are, whether we know it or not, are trying to focus this toward a certain group of people who will be receptive.
Well, I think the strength of my work is that I didn't try to focus it to anyone, because I don't think you can guess where your strength's coming from. I think it crosses all boundaries of religion, wealth, political activism, and there isn't one political activist that I write with. Well, there's one well-known political activist. Outside of that, none of the others. And it's disproportionate the amount of people I reach who make a cross-section of society against the ones we would think, the stereotypes.
Just saying in general, because you wouldn't go down and give a speech in front of a bunch of deaf mutes, you know.
Well, I'd try. How do you know? Just because people talk in here doesn't mean they're not deaf mutes. How can you make a distinction?
Well, that's my little funny.
We agree. We've got such an array of listeners, I trust, even now, whom we'll invite to call in pretty shortly and prove their presence. But the truth is where you find it, and listeners, too, those who seek are a whole array. And while we could fault Prouty for association with a magazine published by Scientologists or anybody else and almost, virtually...
Well, I don't
anyone has some grounds, but
it goes out. Yeah.
Okay, but the point you're making, May, that I think we should really stress is that you really are committed to the truth wherever it comes from.
Yeah, and I think that you don't know where it comes from. Victor Marchetti, who wrote his book on the CIA and cult of intelligence, writes for Willie Cardo, who's the staunchest Nazi in this country. And if you follow the cult of intelligence, it leads you to Reinhard Gehlen and the Nazis. And the publisher has nothing to do with it if the context isn't changed. And I don't agree with Tom that I select my audience or trying to reach a particular thing. I am old enough and smart enough to know that you can't guess who is listening or picking it up and what decision they make. We're in Silicon Valley and David Emery's on here all the time. You guys are on the air. Some guy in a position of power someday, if you're on the brink of World War III, may stop it and say, I'm going to push this button back or expose this person, or they're turning in a note today, this is the plan for this operation. I just assume that somewhere there they're listening. I know by the mail and the kind of reception I get, but I never ask who or why, because I don't think we can guess who or why, and I wouldn't categorize people.
May, if it's okay, I'd like to... jump around and ask you about a few things that you've mentioned in passing on your show, but I've never heard you thoroughly explain. And one thing I heard you mention many years ago, but that I thought was far-fetched, but a lot of information has come out since then to support it, is the Nazi activity in Antarctica.
Yes.
Can you delineate that a little bit more, and maybe I'll throw in the stuff that I've heard about it.
Adolf Hitler sent a man named Mr. Richter, R-I-C-H-T-E-R, down to Antarctica in the 30s, and he stalked out. If you get your National Geographic, which isn't a radical left newspaper, a magazine, and get your map of Antarctica, if you have it, there's Richter, Adolf Hitler's area marked out. It says Hitler, Richter's area. I have a geographic from 1957, 1960, 67. Get your Antarctica. I keep one posted by my kitchen door. And he anticipated, because they were going into rocket sciences and flying saucer type of weapons, where they would be located. There's warm water bases. They even have an atomic plant down there. And Admiral Byrd went down quite frequently in his last trip down to Antarctica. It's all top secret. It's not open in the National Archives. And as soon as he came home, he met with Mr. Forrestal, the Secretary of Navy, and had a consultation. A few weeks later, Forrestal was at Bethesda Hospital flying out of a window.
Right.
You know, just as at the time, update Contragate, when Admiral McFarland's having a little trouble with Oliver North, and they think he's a little nervous, he says to the former National Security Advisor, Poindexter System McFarland, maybe we should put North at Bethesda.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're still doing it. Let's cool them off at Bethesda. Well, who knows what would happen. At that point, they may just have unloaded him after a lot of the things before it really came down. But the stuff about Antarctica was locked up. And the voyage, in order to get to Antarctica, you don't say, I think I'll go to Antarctica. You either have to go through Argentina,
right,
which was a base. And then I have a book, The UFO and Nazi Secret Weapons. And I have a large Police Gazette article about Hitler's escape and the use of Antarctica. And Antarctica has been a strategic, it's the size of the United States.
Right.
You want to talk about Antarctica? It's a continent, and it's huge, and it has tremendous ability. It touches the tip, just about touching the toe of South Africa and Argentina. And those are, very much in desire to control the world. And Hitler had taken all South America as a base. Juan Perón was trained, in Italy with the Vatican and with Franco, and close to the Nazi. Money was kept in their accounts. Antarctica is a very important base, and you can't, as I say, you can't just travel there. You have to either go through, like, Port Hueneme down near Santa Barbara, And there's only a couple cities that you have permission. You have to have permission to even take a tour.
Unless you live in Tierra del Fuego or something.
Yeah, that's the area. What do you got here?
These are a couple of several books I have for you, May.
Aliens from
The Morning of the Magicians seem to get into it. I don't know if you had any commentary.
The Morning of the Magicians touches a little bit on the Nazis' interest in Antarctica.
Oh, it does?
And some of their other scientific, I guess, expeditions.
Well, these boats were going down to Antarctica back and forth before the war was over with stuff that belonged to Adolf Hitler and Martin Bormann. And what do you think about the Antarctica connections, Tom?
Well, it's very mysterious. Excuse me. There were two submarines, German submarines, that surfaced off the coast of Argentina after World War II. Actually, it was one in May and one in June, I think. And
Didn't they take about 6 months from Germany to a long way or something?
Yeah, I don't recall exactly when they left Norway. They loaded up in Norway, and they went someplace, and they hardly had any crew left on them. And the war in Europe ended on the 8th of May in 1945, and here it was more than 30 days later, or at least that long, these U-boats were tooling around someplace, and they finally showed up and surrendered that time. Now the question is, what happened to their crews, and what were they doing all this time?
Yeah.
Any other GI, American GI, or German soldier, sailor, or whatever, want to go home?
Of course, the Police Gazette had a detailed account, and didn't Ladislaus Farrago write about Antarctica? Did he write some stories about that? He did, about Hans Ulrich Rudel and Hannah Reich flying for months from Spain down to Argentina and the base down near Antarctica, taking all the stuff from the Third Reich that they could.
Yeah, well,
the papers.
There is an obscure book written by this Ernst Zundel in Canada, who's noteworthy because of a sort of a libel suit the Canadians had against him. But he describes the Germans before World War II doing a lot of exploration on the the coast of Antarctica, closest to the southern tip of South America. And they did have one big polar expedition down there. And what were they doing there? Well, that's a good question. We really don't know to this day what was going on there.
I did have somebody at my house, that stage manager for that play. It was called JFK Lives. It was a one-man show that was supposed to be given in Monterey. And the guy who was doing the stage lighting for him came to the house with the actor. He was from Boston, and they wanted to meet me. They wanted me to give an introduction that night before the show about John Kennedy, a few words. And it was very nice. They came to the house, and then all of a sudden, this guy freaks out when he saw my Nazi books, and he said that he lived with a man named Richter in New York who was the son of the one who had marked Antarctica for Adolf Hitler, and that's why I keep that map in my house, because I still have his name and took a picture of the house. He sent me a picture, and he's the one who freaked out and thought he was a Lebensborn, that around Europe he saw himself duplicated and realized that he asked his mother, who was my father, and he had made his way from Holland to New York and was in a drug scene, and this guy, under the guise of rehabilitating, identical to Jim Jones. As a matter of fact, they were at my home the night before Jonestown, and when they heard that scandal, they left the house and fled, and they didn't put on the play or anything. They were at my house all night looking at these German books. He was so fascinated, and I had a copy of Mein Kampf that's a very rare one, and this guy was just shaking and crying and lived with his Richter. And he told me about it, so I got the National Geographic map with that section. And my interest, based on Zundel's book. Anyway, do you still have the Nazi UFO book? Do you sell that?
No, I can't get it. Zundel stopped shipping. He said he had so few copies that he couldn't afford to sell them to me at wholesale. So this has been quite some time ago now.
Could we copy those and sell? Let's go into the bootleg business, Tom.
I don't know. These guys are pretty nasty, whether they take kindly to that or not. I don't know. I suppose if we paid them royalties.
I just saw an article about him last week in his trial. Maybe I should write to him up in Toronto and see. Because it was in his book that he covered a print, a section out of Time magazine, May of 1945, when the war was over, that Henry Luce printed, saying that Hitler didn't die in the bunker. And I had a copy of that Time magazine at the house and didn't know it. It belonged to my son, and he had saved that. Picked it up somewhere, and among his things was that time, saying that Hitler's cook was a double for Hitler and that he was the one who died in the bunker.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that the person, the body out there at found outside the Chancellery Building in May 1945. It's been shown, at least to my satisfaction, there's documentation on this, that neither one of those bodies was Eva Braun or Adolf Hitler. Now, the whole question of what happened to Hitler is a very interesting one and still open, and you have a lot of information on that.
Well, here's your book. You have some book covers here that people can understand if they want to read. Here's right here, Aftermath, by Ladislas Farago. This tells the adventures of a lot of these people afterwards.
Yeah,
maybe
Martin
share
Mormon.
That with people because they don't know these books are around.
Aftermath is out of print, but it is available. I have it used, and you can find it used. It's not impossible to get, and it's Fargo's last, pretty much his last work about Martin Bormann. The book is about tracing Bormann, interviewing people in South America. Fargo went to South America, interviewed as many people as he could, and to my satisfaction has proved that Bormann is alive down there. You got to remember that when this book was written back in the 70s, we didn't have all the information that we have now and information from subsequent books. But, speaking of Bormann, the next book that absolutely shows that Bormann is alive is a book by Paul Manning, Martin Bormann in Exile. And then, now I don't want to get into that just this minute. I want to mention another book that very recent, just a couple years old, Confessions of Klaus Barbie. Now, this by a journalist named Wilson. Wilson went down and interviewed Barbie, and Barbie told him point blank that Martin Bormann wasn't alive on a huge estate in southern Argentina, or maybe central southern Argentina.
Close to Antarctica.
So there's no question that Martin Bormann is very much alive. And if Bormann is alive, and his henchman Heinrich Müller, which people that have studied the Reich know who Heinrich Müller was, if they're alive, then why isn't it possible that Hitler was alive at least for some time after the end of World War II?
Let me remind you, listening to KKUP, Cupertino, I think it's plain to see that the Southern Hemisphere is quite a focus for this fascist activity with Chile and Argentina going down right to the tip of South America, as you said, close to Antarctica, and then South Africa on the African continent. When you look at the Falklands War, which seems like such a massive military effort for a bunch of pieces of rock with sheep grazing on them, you wonder what the real motivation of the British and the
British want to hold on to that rock. It's a entrance to Antarctica, and it's very important to see what's going on. They want their foot in there. They don't want to be out of it. It was very important.
There was a recent article in People's World about dead penguins washing up on the shores of the Falklands, which seems like a minor thing, but they looked as if they died of radiation poisoning.
Well, there is an atomic energy plant down in Antarctica. That was also written up in National Geographic. They have their own electricity and a plant down there.
Yeah, what country manages that plant?
I'd have to look it up again. I thought it was American.
I think it was a joint effort coming out of the International Geophysical Year. Yeah. American dominated.
It was American dominated,
A supposed...
What do you think about that story that was on CNN on the 20th of February about Hitler being buried a month ago in Argentina? Did you hear that one?
Yeah,
I had that on World Watchers. What do you think? I called up Atlanta, Georgia to get the story, and they said, yeah, it came out of Argentina, and... what do you think of that story? Sure, it's possible, don't you think so?
I didn't see that one. It was also in the Mercury, wasn't it?
No, simultaneously, the same day on February the 20th, Sans Day Mercury had a long article that the identification of Hitler's teeth was false.
That's
and
right.
That it didn't match at all, that where he would have had a porcelain plate, it wasn't found, and that doesn't destroy in fire, and that he didn't have work on his lower bridges, and the dentist never referred to the lower teeth, and that... by close study, this guy gave a paper at the medical convention in Toronto.
Quite impressive.
And it came out February the 20th, the same day that CNN had the story on the news, that Hitler had been buried in Argentina. I called to check out, and they said, yeah, this is what we've got. And I don't think they put every rumor on there. That's the important thing. I think that Ted Turner and these major broadcasting know something, and they're telling you something. The other world doesn't know. There isn't a Jew that cares. And I mentioned the rabbi in Monterey, he says, ho, 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 you know, like Santa Claus, you know. They really have no conception that this is a way of saying to people. My first hint that well, I've believed a long time that Hitler was alive, but one of the current hints, because I had believed he was, last I heard was in Switzerland at this Homer Kavalarium or whatever, was that this Leder Rivas, the cocaine dealer who's so pro-Hitler, down in Colombia, the one that was just arrested, was speaking in terms after he was arrested. They had interviews of his past that would just fill in the biography of him, and they were all Hitler in the present tense. Hitler is my leader. Hitler is not Hitler is my hero, or not Hitler was, but Hitler is doing this, and Hitler is doing that, and he's the one who.